You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_data. So the first televised combine is officially in the books. And what I'm going to do is kind of treat it the way that I treat Packers games. Especially late games. But the problem is there's so much that goes on in a game and in the combine that a lot of it is just initial thoughts. I really am going to need time to go back and look at each guy and each time. You know, I've got a list of 20. I have my rankings and I have my notes. So I want to go back and look at my own rankings to see if anything's different. But also kind of see who else, right? I didn't do quarterbacks, so if there's any interesting news on quarterbacks, I want to be able to relay that. But again, I didn't do it, so I can't give my opinion. I have to look at everybody else's. What were the expectations compared to what happened? So in other words, I'm going to have a more in-depth view on specifics at a different time. Right now, it's just sort of my general feeling about what happened yesterday and what it all kind of means, because, I mean, it gets wildly blown out of proportion, and you've heard this said probably 1,000 times, but I'm just going to say it again. Not right now, later. But I just, in general, I don't think stuff is going to move as much as everyone says it's going to move. There might be a couple people you point out and say, all right, you know, these guys probably did move, but not just because of what happened yesterday. I don't know how long that's going to take, but there's plenty of stuff to fill in if that doesn't take all the time. In fact, I'd actually like to be able to get to some of the other information. So we'll see how it goes, but the plan is we'll talk about the combine. If there's time, we'll move on to other things. If you are not in the Packernet Podcast Facebook group, please get in there. Please like the Packernet Podcast Facebook page. As I say in the intro, but sometimes it gets forgot because it's in the intro, check out packernet.com. It's a really good resource. All it is an aggregation of news. News, videos, audio. It just pulls it in from different sources. And so it's a good thing when you wake up in the morning, just go to Packernet, see what's there, see what happened, what's new for Packers news. Also in the intro, pack_daddy is my Twitter handle. Just throwing it out there. But we are very, very close. Tomorrow is officially the last day of February. So if you want to get in on this giveaway, make sure you jump in on Patreon at patreon.com/pack_daddy. You can support the show for as little as $1 a month. That's all you need. I don't do tiers anymore. I used to, you know, depending on what kind of content I put up, you know, the ones aren't getting it, but I'll give it to the fives. And this one's super special, so it's only for the tens. I don't do that anymore. You're in, you're in. At the end of the day, Patreon isn't necessarily a paywall. It's to support the show. And you support however you feel like. And if you're a supporter, you will get the benefits. And I will just trust that people will give as they feel they can give. And so far, that's panned out. There's been a lot of very, very generous people. And like I said, people very rarely give because they want stuff. As much as I feel like that's what's going to motivate people, usually it's because they want to support the show. And again, I really appreciate all of that. But get in either way, because I want somebody to win this. Somebody is going to. But I want it to be you. You there who has not donated. Anyways, let's take a break and discuss Le Combine.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing. But they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
I had somebody ask me yesterday how long this Arizona ad was going to run for. Here's the sad news. This is the last week. I know it's sad, because this is the last time I'm going to be able to sit here and beg and plead with you to do something amazing this week. I gotta be honest, depending on what it is I'm talking about in these advertisements, sometimes I put my heart into it a little bit more than others. It depends what it is. But I don't mess around with vacations, man. I live for it. I need nothing in my life. I am the most simple person on the planet. All I ask is that once a year, I get to do something awesome. That's it. That's it. That's all I want. And I'm just wanting you to make sure that you get that little bit of awesome this year. Maybe you already got plans. I don't know. But if you don't, and if you're just nose to the grindstone, too busy, can't do it, too much to do, wrong, pick your head up for 1 second and listen to me. It's cold outside. It's horrible. And you know what? Nobody actually needs you that much. Sorry to tell you. You're not that important. Your work will survive without you. And if they can't, then guess what? Your job will be there when you get back if you're that irreplaceable. Please consider going to Arizona for the Cactus League spring training, where there is amazing, beautiful weather, great outdoor scenery, amazing food, and of course, lots of baseball and the ability to, you know, take the kids, take whoever you want to take, go out with some of your boys, ladies' night out, or weekend out, I don't know, whatever. Please go do something awesome. Because I'm not going to be able to for a while. I don't even think I'm taking it. This is one of the few years I'm not doing anything. Because I have to grind on this. Because, you know, it's one of those things. We need money. We can't be spending money. So I'm like on a 2-3 year plan. I got to live through somebody. And I want you to go on a vacation, take a bunch of pictures and show me. So I can close my eyes real tight and pretend I'm in Arizona doing something as awesome as this. Please just go to visitarizona.com/springtraining and check it out. All right? Just check it out. Just think about it. All right, so here's sort of how I'm thinking about things. And I swear somebody asked me a question, but maybe not. It's entirely possible I was just looking at Dylan's post in the Facebook group, but I know somebody asked me a question. But listen, it's a general question that a lot of people are going to ask. No, where is the question? Now I'm mad. But let's start with what Dylan said, and it's not really a question, it's just some highlights. He said, some things that stood out from the first group of wide receivers. Justin Jefferson ran a 4.44 40. Chase Claypool, 4.45 40. Donovan Peoples-Jones, 44.5-inch vertical, third highest of all time for wide receiver. Higgins not working out, didn't see how he's going to get drafted in the first round anymore. Boom, found it. It was Dylan. Dylan's all over the place, man. All right, here we go. Question for the podcast. After the combine workouts, how do you feel about the order of the wide receiver board? I'm assuming he's talking about mine. He said, I know the combine can lie, but I feel like some of these guys, Claypool, Mims, Peoples-Jones, and Jefferson, threw a wrench in things, and what seemed like a fairly clear picture on the order or tiers they were in isn't so clear anymore. So let's start with, for me personally, because then that'll kind of give an idea of what I think the NFL is generally doing anyways. But again, there's two things to keep in mind. A lot of this has to do with lower limit tiers are the most important thing. If you fall below the threshold, meaning doing worse than we thought, that's more problematic than better than we thought. The reason I say that is there's certain lines that when you cross it, it kind of becomes like, I don't know if I can touch you. Because that's just not going to play in the NFL. Maybe you can get away with it in college, even though we knew you were slow. You know, that's just too slow for the NFL. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be just 40 time, it's whatever. That's number one. And I guess there's kind of 2A and 2B. If you're better than we thought, there's two things. Number one, you look at, for example, 40 time. I think there's an upper limit. And when you're above it, you're just above it. And whether you're a 4.35, a 4.30, a 4.27, or a 4.25, I just don't think it matters that much. Somebody had asked the question on Twitter, expecting him to run a 4.22. Keep that in mind. Somebody had asked the question, how fast would he need to run to move him up in your rankings? And my answer, which is the correct answer, is he cannot move up based on 40 time. He can't. I don't care if he runs a 4.19. What is he going to be able to do better than a 4.22? I mean, completely random example, but let me just, doesn't even make any sense, but it's the first thing that popped in my head. Let's say you're a lumberjack, like an old school lumberjack. You hack down trees with an axe. And you're trying to recruit guys that hack down trees with axes. And you got a guy that's so strong, he can swing once and the tree comes down. And so you know how much strength is required. Let's say it's, you know, this number of 10. You need to be a 10 to be able to swing once and take a tree down. And he can take a tree down in one swing. So you know he's at least a 10. Turns out his strength is an 11. That's cool, but it doesn't mean anything. What does that mean? Well, it means if he swings once, he can take it down in one swing. Okay, isn't that what we already knew? Yes, exactly. That's what we already knew. So that's the other end of this. Some of these guys are doing things that just confirms what we already knew about them. Maybe to a higher degree, but I don't know that it moves the needle all that much. And then beyond that, there's the question of, for some of these guys, maybe it's faster than we thought. Maybe it is a higher threshold than we would have expected. But if we can't find it on tape in college, it gets thrown in the trash. And so that's why they always say that when we talk about the combine, let's say a guy looks like he runs a 4.5 and he ends up running a 4.38. I don't know what the expectation was for Denzel Mims. That's a great example of somebody that you know, a lot of guys are going to go and look back on because his measurables are incredible. But the point is, if you don't see 4.38 on tape, who cares? Because at the end of the day, he's never going to be asked to run a 40 time in the NFL. He's not going to line up on the line of scrimmage in that weird stance. And then when he snaps the ball, you run in a straight line in that kind of a sprint. That's just not how that works, dude. Not even close. And so what really matters is what happened back in college. That's why they say that the tape is the most important thing. The only question is, if you look like a 4.5 guy and you run a 4.38, we have to see, is there something weird going on? Are you actually a 4.38 guy and we just missed it somehow? So, for example, let's say we're digging and we find out that in week one, you were blazing fast. And it's like, dude, if you did this all year, you would be way up higher. You know, your grade based on this game would put you a lot higher. The question is, why did you fall off? And we dig and we dig and we dig and we find out you stubbed your toe real hard, you know, out at a restaurant the other day or after week one. You went out to celebrate a great game and you stubbed your toe, and it turns out you actually sprained your toe. Now it's like, dude, right? You see what I'm saying? So in other words, you are week one. We thought week one was a fluke. No. The rest of the season was a fluke. Week one was actually who you are. Now we move you up. But if you on tape look like a 4.5 guy, but you run in a straight line at a 40-yard dash of 4.4, I'm going to trust what you did in college. Because that's what you do when you get on a football field. I don't know why. There are reasons. I talked about it on another show that it was, who was it? Mike Mayock explained why guys are sometimes slower on the field than they are on a 40 time, and it's the mental processing part. They're thinking, they're trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do? Because again, you're not just getting down into this crouching stance and sprinting forward. You've got a guy that's standing in your way. You have to try to get past him. You have to read the coverage in front of you and understand what your assignment is. You have to have a plan developed on how you're going to get around this guy, how you're going to get past this guy, how you're going to set him up and try to get around him and through him. And it's this chess match where, you know, I did this 3 times, so if I do it again, he's going to think I'm running that route, but I'm going to do this. And you got all this stuff running through your head, so you're not just running in a straight line. So suddenly your 4.38 time looks a lot closer to a 4.48 time, which is why you look like that on the field, which is why you running super fast doesn't mean anything unless we can demonstrate that for some reason we didn't see it on tape, but we believe that you can do it in the pros even though you couldn't do it in college, which I think is a very rare thing, which is why I think there's a lot of media hype about guys flying up the boards or falling down the boards that probably doesn't super exist. Some of it definitely will, and again, it comes down to tiers. So let me give you an example on my own list here. So the first thing I said, there's a lower limit. Generally for wide receivers, I believe that lower limit is about a 4.6. You want to come in under a 4.6. Now, there might be some exceptions for some of these bigger guys, but I think for a lot of those guys, it might be a question of, okay, should we just move them to tight end? Because if you're a 4.6 or slower, but you're 6'4", 230 pounds, you're a tight end. I hate to tell you, but you are. I know you want to be a wide receiver. You want to get that wide receiver money, but, you know, sorry. So Antonio Gandy-Golden, 6'4", 223, ran a 4.6. He's kind of on the verge, and maybe because he's 6'4", we'll let it slide, but at the end of the day, it's not a matter of, yeah, but for a 6'4 person, right? It's kind of like when you're talking to your significant other, and they're like, can we do this? It only costs $300. And I'm like, are you kidding me? We don't have $300. And they say, yeah, but it usually costs $500. This is a deal. No, it's not. We don't have $300. Right, so saying, well, he runs a 4.6, but he's 6'4". Yeah, but I need you to run 4.5. Can you do it? Because if not, I don't care if you're 9 feet tall. It might be freakish how fast you are, given your height and weight, but you need to run faster than a 4.6 to beat the corners, and if you can't do it, you're not going to be able to beat them. So, you know, the other disheartening thing, I know a lot of people were super hyped up about Quintez Cephas. A lot of talk about him. I was excited to watch him because people were saying he's really, really good. He ran the slowest 40 time of anybody. It was an official 4.73. He was the slowest wide receiver, and he's only 6'1", 202 pounds. I hate to tell you, but this guy's going undrafted. I mean, maybe he won't, but I'd be shocked at this slow of a time that anybody would even draft him. At 6'1", 202, you can't even break 4'7"? Dude, he's not going early, that's for sure. So that, again, that's the lower limit threshold. You see a guy like Quintez Cephas that you want to be excited about, but you see that 4'7", and you just say, nope, sorry. That's instant, right? It's just instant. That is when you say, and that's why it works differently than upper limit. Upper limits, it's a matter of, okay, that's great that you're amazing, but you didn't put it on tape, so I don't believe that you can do it on a football field, especially going from college to the pros. On the other side of things, you can beat people in college, but this time right here doesn't beat people in the pros. Boom, you're off the list. Or we drop you down the list, right? We're not going to take a guy that's this slow. Granted, you're amazing at A, B, C, and D. Your speed is so slow that we have to at least drop you down to here. Because the odds of you being able to make it despite this issue, very low. So, you know, the Quintez Cephas, Juwan Jennings, Cody White, Tony Brown, Malcolm Perry, Omar Bayless, Isaiah Hodgins, Ben Victor, KJ Hill, who, by the way, I've been saying since forever is wildly overrated. I didn't understand the KJ Hill thing. Some people are putting KJ Hill above KJ Hamler. KJ Hill is my third lowest ranked wide receiver out of 20. I don't get it. He's 6 foot 192 and he can't get open. He has no speed. He has no shiftiness. He has no anything. I don't get it. So I don't want to root against anybody. But, I mean, when I saw 4'6", it was like, yeah, thank you, exactly. So, you know, he didn't move anywhere on my list. He was not anywhere on my list. And again, you got a guy that's as small as he is, that's considered a slot guy running a 4'6", that's not great. And then Antonio Gandy-Golden. Other than that, everybody was better. On the flip side of things, you look at Henry Ruggs. Now, he didn't break that time. I stayed up just to watch that. And as soon as he ran a 4.27, I didn't bother staying up for the second one. And I kind of had a feeling he wouldn't, because everybody was underwhelming. Everybody was slower than expected, which I think a lot of it has to do with media hype, trying to get people excited about it. Could it happen? But here's the thing. That's not a lower limit. Again, this was just a media thing. I don't think there's any difference in my mind between a 4.27 and a 4.19. There is, I mean, in a literal sense. But beyond that, play speed, I actually think I would bet... that he's faster on a football field than John Ross is. Again, we monitored the miles per hour. Now, there are faster guys that just aren't tracked, because maybe I have a feeling that the NFL stats thing, the next-gen stats, is just recording people with a football in their hand. They're not recording every single player on the field, so maybe there are guys out there just blazing fast that aren't getting recorded. But again, Henry Ruggs is faster than Tyreek Hill. That's all I need to know. That's all anybody needs to know. Nobody cares. I think fans, people like me who want to see it broken, I think we all cared. The media cared a lot more than, I don't think there was a single person, a GM or anything, that cared about Henry Ruggs' 40 time. Not one. The only thing that would have caused concern is, nothing would have. If he ran a 4.35, people would have just said, okay, what happened? Did he tweak his ankle? Because everybody already knows he's fast. They saw how fast he was when they watched him. So this doesn't mean anything. Now, somebody that's a little bit of a different situation is Denzel Mims. Now, again, I don't know what the expectation was. Maybe people watched him, you know, GMs who have a way of tracking speed are looking at it going, you know, he's a little faster than we thought, but we knew he was fast. In which case, it doesn't move the needle at all. But Denzel Mims is 6'3", 207. He ran a 4.38. Now, just on my personal board, I have Denzel Mims 11 out of 12. He is in my category. There's the guys I really like in Tier 1, and then in Tier 2, there's a huge pile of guys. And then, you know, Tier 3 is other guys I just didn't super care for. Denzel Mims is one of the guys I liked. So here's the other question. What was my note on him? If I thought his speed was fine, it was one of the attributes I liked about him, but there was something else I didn't, then it doesn't move the needle. Here's the interesting thing. When I read my note, I said that I was torn and I had considered putting him above Donovan Peoples-Jones. Now, Donovan Peoples-Jones is another one that I was asked about. Would you move him up? He's already one of my top wide receivers. I was already way, way up on Donovan Peoples-Jones. His average was 13th. On the big board that I do, where I aggregate all the big boards that I can find online, he was ranked 13th. I have him at 6. I have him above Henry Ruggs, above CeeDee Lamb, and above T. Higgins. He's not moving anywhere on my board except maybe into the like category. possibly above a guy like Brandon Ayuk. Again, I have to look at this more closely as far as what they did and what my stuff is. But again, sticking with Denzel Mims for a second, I said that I was torn and I almost put him above guys like Donovan Peoples-Jones. The biggest problem is that he couldn't separate. And again, I only watch one game, maybe two games per guy if I couldn't quite determine things. But generally, I just wanted to get a feel for what they, who they were. And what he was a guy that did a fantastic job, a masterful job of when the ball's in the air, adjusting, right? Slowing down just enough so that he can get just enough separation or keep the corner away from the ball so he can go up and get it. His body control, all that stuff. But the guy couldn't separate. So, again, that's one of those weird things where, dude, he runs a 4.38. He should be able to separate. But you got to go, what? Did he? Can he? Again, I just watched one game. I got to go back and watch a few others. If he can, guess what? He might go above Donovan Peoples-Jones, meaning I might move him from 11 to 5 or 6. But let's also not forget, you know who is actually more impressive than Denzel Mims? He's 6'3". This other guy is 6'4". He ran a 4.38. This other guy ran a 4.37. So he's an inch taller and ran a hundredth of a second faster. You know which guy I'm talking about? I'm talking about Marquez Valdez-Scantling. 6'4", 206, so basically the exact same weight, and ran faster than Denzel Mims did. He was drafted in the 5th round. So what are the odds that MVS went flying up the boards and was suddenly a 3rd-round draft pick or any of this stuff, right? There wasn't, because at the end of the day, people knew what his tape looked like, and he fell, I mean, all the way to the back of the 5th. It was a compensatory pick we took him with. He was basically a 6th-round pick. Why? How does a 6'4", 206-pound guy running a 4.37 fall all the way into the end of the 5th, a 5th-round compensatory pick? Because it doesn't really matter. It just matters what you do on tape. So for Denzel Mims, probably some people are going to go back and look at it. I mean, he was already better than a 5th-round prospect anyway, so the question is, do we bump him up a little more? And look, I'm not going to pretend to think that everybody's a purist, right? I'm sure that just based on tape, MVS was maybe considered undraftable, but you got teams like the Packers going, dude, he's 6'4", 206, ran 4.37. I want him. I just want to see if we can make him into something. I got to know. I'm positive that some of these teams just get enamored. It's possible that they've got like a 2nd-round grade on this guy, but you know what? I'm taking him in the 1st because he's just a freak, or because I don't care what the tape says. You know, he can do these things. He's going to be special. I want him. So some of these guys probably did help themselves a little bit, even if in the purest sense it maybe shouldn't have. But again, the only guys that really should be helping themselves are ones that beat expectations. Again, Jalen Reagor was expected to do everything he did. Maybe not quite to the extent, but I was told before the combine he's going to run fast, which he only ran a 4.47, which I was actually kind of excited he ran a 4.47, because here I am expecting him to run in the 4.3s. He runs a 4.47. Again, this is a great example of a guy that maybe hurt his draft stock, despite the fact that he was great in the other drills. He had the 2nd best vertical jump behind Donovan Peoples-Jones. He was actually tied with Henry Rugg. But again, he's only 5'11". So here's a great example of, and I'm guessing most people would say I'm nuts, but I genuinely believe, if anything, Jalen Reagor dropped a little bit. Because the expectation for him, let's just say the expectation was he was going to jump 40 inches and run a 4.38. If he jumps 42 inches but runs a 4.47, does he go up or down? Everybody knows he's going to jump out of the building and he's going to run really fast. Except he jumped out of the building but didn't really run that fast. He almost ran a 4.5. I would be willing to bet it dropped. Because that's the thing. That's a real number. So you can go back and look at the tape all you want. That, I think that's a separate category. Again, 4.35, generally speaking. Maybe it's a little bit different, but generally speaking, that's sort of the blazing fast speed. And it was, I think it was generally assumed that he was at least close to that number. Come to find out, he's closer to 4.5, which is just kind of a normal average wide receiver speed. You got to realize that, you know, maybe unless you can look at his miles per hour on film and realize, look, he just plays faster. He's not a great 40-time guy. I think it's possible that people look at that and he falls a little bit. Despite having a great combine, if I had to guess, he went backwards more than he went forwards with this. Because everybody already knows he can jump a mile high. The thing that shocked everybody was how slowly he ran. which again made me happy because it gives us a much better opportunity to get him. Because if he runs a 4.35, we're not going to touch him. He's gone long before he gets to 30. Running a 4.47 with this many wide receivers, it's possible. It's possible. So again, this is kind of my interpretation of how the NFL works compared to what you're going to be hearing, which is that he's one of the guys that had a great, you know, one of these unbelievable things. And he did, but again, it's how well you did compared to expectations. His ranking of being somebody that's going to go at around 20 is because he's expected to be a 40-inch vertical guy and a 4.38 guy. I'm making those numbers up, but whatever. When you readjust what he did, does he move up or down from 20? He's going to move down. Again, I don't know that. And maybe he wasn't expected to run that fast. Maybe that was something I created in my mind and he was considered to be a 4.45 guy. I don't know. Again, this is what the media is telling me, which they've been wrong a lot, compared to what Brian Gutekunst is expecting. That's the difference. And I don't know what Brian Gutekunst thinks. I'm just telling you how I interpret this working. But again, either way, okay, so maybe it doesn't fall on Brian Gutekunst's board, but Brian Gutekunst, the media interpretation of where he is going to line up more closely with what Brian Gutekunst already knows, and that is he can really jump. He is fast, but he's not Henry Ruggs fast. It's not even close. He's not a lot of people fast. He's closer to Davante Adams than he is. I mean, legitimately, he's closer to Davante Adams than even. Why can't I think of any of these semi-fast guys? I don't want to say MVS. Man, what is going on in my brain? Trevor Davis. That's one of them. What did Davis run? A 4.42? Davante ran a 4.51, something like that. Bottom line is his speed, at least in terms of 40 time, is average. It might be a little bit better than average, but in terms of category, he's like a 4.5-ish guy. So again, that's the biggest thing. You know, okay, so Donovan Peoples-Jones, right? Where does he end up? Well, one of the things I loved about him is watching him do these end zone fades, in which he just flies up and plucks the ball out of the air. So, I mean, did I expect him to have that good of... No, nobody expected him to have that good of a vert. But if you came into it knowing that's the best part about him, and again, the main media, whatever, have him around 13th. I had him at 6. So maybe a lot of people are going to be boosting him up the boards, but I'm probably not. I might want to go back and look at it and possibly consider putting him above a guy like Ayuk. Maybe I'll put him in the my guy category because of what he's able to do, especially when he's running a 4.48. So he's a big guy with massive hops, and I mean, he's quick. I mean, again, 4.48 is quick. It's not blazing fast. So Jalen Reagor is there with, he's with Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk ran a 4.5. Donovan Peoples-Jones, 4.48. Jalen Reagor, 4.47. They're within 5 or 6 40 times of each other. So that's kind of the question, right? If a lot of what Jalen Reagor does that's so special is his speed, you got to go back and reevaluate it. If Donovan Peoples-Jones is just seen as a guy with good hands, good at, you know, the 50-50 stuff, but he doesn't seem super fast and whatever, we got to go back and reevaluate it, because he's a 4.48 guy that can jump out of the building, right? Everything is different for every person, right? CeeDee Lamb ran a 4.5. I don't think he was expected to do much more than that, because he's more of a Davante Adams type. He's not a burner. He's just a good wide receiver. Same with Brandon Ayuk. He's more of a Davante Adams, clean, smooth route runner. And so him running a 4.5 is not going to bother anybody. You know, Jerry Jeudy ran a 4.45. I think that was pretty much what was expected for him. He's fast, but nobody expected him to be crazy fast. So nothing really changes. So again, I'm going to go back and look at what my notes were on some of these guys. But I tend to think that my list for a lot of these guys is going to stay the same. Again, KJ Hill is going to stay down here near the bottom. Didn't have any interest. You know, Isaiah Hodgins was down. I did have him higher than most, but he's still down in the, you know, sort of like the rest category. He's probably just going to stay down there. I don't see a whole lot that's going to change, but I do want to go back and watch Denzel Mims, watch a couple different games and see if I'm just wrong. And if I can see him kind of flying past people with that skill set that I already like about him, he might be moving up quite a bit. And I'll look at another guy like Justin Jefferson. I was not as high on Justin Jefferson. A lot of people are very high. Overall, he's ranked 7th. I have him 12th. I just didn't see very much. Justin Jefferson ran a 4.43, which is that's when you're getting into being fast, right? That's the Trevor Davis type speed, right? We've had a lot of 4.43, 4.44, 4.42 guys. Never have they really materialized, but again, you get a guy like Justin Jefferson, who's apparently a much better receiver, who is quite fast. He's one of those guys that I want to know what people like in him, so I'm definitely excited to see he ran a 4.43 so that I can go back and watch him. I'm still trying to figure out what makes CD Lamb a great wide receiver, and his 40 time isn't going to move the needle for me. Matt Waldman actually did a video breaking him down, and I swear I think my opinion of CD Lamb actually went down after watching that video. He tried so hard to explain what makes him a good receiver, and I think every example he gave was like, that wasn't impressive. He had like back-to-back plays where he pushed off. Like, dude, that's... He didn't get separation. He pushed off and caught the ball. That's not impressive. I don't know what you're talking... I don't get it. Help me understand that one. Otherwise, outside of wide receiver, Albert Okwuegbunam, he was for a long time considered to be one of the top guys. In fact, in the 2019 draft class, he was considered to be one of the best. He went back to school. Then this year, at the beginning, it was just he's definitely the top guy, but he's been falling like a rock. He ran a 4.49. Now, again, same exact thing. I mean, if you don't see that, if you don't see him just flying past people, then it doesn't super matter. But I have a feeling a lot of people, that turned a lot of heads. The next fastest was Bryson Hopkins. He's already my number one guy. So I'm more interested in Albert Okwuegbunam, who I have as my number seven, at 6'5", 255, running as fast as he did. That's worth a second look. Bryson Hopkins being my number one, being the second fastest. And again, I'm just doing 40 time because I'm not going to go through absolutely everything. That's what I want to do with that, which more in depth. And actually, looking at these RAS, the relative athletic scores, is going to be interesting. Speaking of, Cole Kmet didn't really run blazing fast, but his overall RAS I saw on Twitter yesterday is just absolutely ridiculous. So relative athletic score is taking into account your speed, your explosiveness, you know, all these different things you're doing at the combine, and then comparing that to how tall and how big you are, and kind of getting an adjusted score for how athletic you are. And Cole Kmet was kind of through the roof. He ran the, although it's not a super impressive, I think it's just the it's not that great of a group of tight ends, but Cole Kmet ran a 4.7, but it was the fourth fastest tight end time. 4.49 was Albert Okwuegbunam. Bryson Hopkins, who was the second fastest, ran a 4.66. So there's just not a ton of speed with a lot of these guys. Somebody else to keep in mind, for me anyways, and I'm not as high, but one of the things that I had a hard time with is trying to figure out where to put guys like Harrison Bryant, because he played for Florida Atlantic. And when you see a guy that is flying past people, but it's much lower competition, the question is, okay, but what are you actually? Right, I would probably look fast playing with kindergartners, but I promise you I'm not fast. It would be like an optical illusion. So if I go back and watch Harrison Bryant flying past people, but realizing he ran a 4.73, that to me is just, I don't know. I was not all that impressed to begin with. However, there's another guy to keep in mind, Hunter Bryant. He's my second highest tight end, and it's because he's a receiving tight end, like a pure receiving tight end. He looks super fast on the field. He ran a 4.74. Now, it's one of the faster times of the tight ends, but there weren't that many tight ends that ran, and nobody really ran that fast. So, although he's maybe not at the bottom of this list, that's not fast. Right? George Kittle ran like a 4.55. Right? 4.6s is just kind of like, okay. 4.7s is not great. In fact, the lower limit threshold, kind of like 4.6 for wide receiver, is about 4.75. In other words, if you're 4.75, we got to look at it and go, I don't know if this is going to work out. Harrison Bryant is a 4.73. That's concerning. Hunter Bryant, 4.74. That's concerning. It would be like a wide receiver running a 4.59. Technically, you're below that 6.0 or 4.6 threshold, but it's still kind of like, geez, that's not, and especially when your whole thing is, I'm a fast receiving type tight end. All right, I'm going to blow past these linebackers. Like, really? At you think at 4.74, you're going to blow past linebackers? Not so sure about that, Chief. Some of them, but not a lot of them. So anyways, that's just kind of where I'm at with that as far as moving guys up and down. I think the tight ends, a lot of them probably move down. Albert Okwuegbunam maybe is going to move up a little bit because he kind of probably crossed a threshold in terms of he is this fast, but I still don't know if he's going to go all that early. It probably will be Cole Kmet and Bryson Hopkins and maybe Albert Okwuegbunam. Maybe that's going to become the top three. But again, even Kmet is a 4.7. I mean, explosion drills are impressive, but I just don't think there's going to be a lot of top-end tight end. I mean, some of these guys might go second round-ish, Cole Kmet and Bryson Hopkins and maybe Albert O, but I think a lot of these guys just hurt their draft stock and just fell. But again, who knows? Maybe this was the expectation, but again, expectation or not, that's not great. You know, just look at Jace for an example, 4.75. He's a receiving tight end. I thought he looked. I thought he was probably my favorite tight end in the entire draft as a receiver. He looked amazing, same as Hunter Bryant. But when you're at 4-7-5, you go in the third round. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying, you know, what I'm butting up against is the idea that some of these guys could go in the first or early second, and there could be a big pile of guys going in the second round. I'm seeing like one or two in the second round, and then maybe third round and later some of these guys are going. It's just not the best group ever. And maybe I'm just being spoiled comparing it to last year, which was a pretty good group, but that's just kind of where I feel like it's at. But anyways, I think I've explained that well enough in terms of where I feel like this is at. And again, I'll try to look a little bit more in depth, see if any other tidbits jump out at me. But why don't we take a break and then look at some other news and notes that are going on around the NFL, and we'll get out of here and enjoy our Fridays.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
So, some quick and dirty here. This is from, it's a few days old, but again, it takes me a while to get through this stuff. Apparently, there is a lot of pushback against this replay rule for, the pass interference replay rule. I don't really understand why. I mean, I understand why people don't like it. I don't understand why you'd want to get rid of it. The problem people have is we implemented this rule and we've thrown challenge flags and they don't overturn anything. Okay, but I still think it's better to keep it in its current state than to just get rid of it. Because the fact of the matter is, if the only purpose of this rule is to make sure that the wildly egregious guy who comes across and hits somebody a full second and a half before the ball even gets there, to make sure that those get called and everything else that's kind of ticky-tack doesn't even get touched, it just means that coaches are misusing it. And explain that to people. If it's even close, we're not going to throw a flag. We're not going to go back and overturn it. But you don't want to get rid of it because there's going to be another situation where a guy comes across the field, clocks somebody 2 seconds before the ball even gets there, it doesn't get called, and you're going to wish you had the ability to throw the flag because that would get overturned. They would throw a penalty on that. And now you want to get rid of it. I don't get it. I understand not liking it. I don't understand getting rid of it. But apparently there is a near unanimous feeling among coaches and whatnot that they want this rule just gone. So I don't understand that. We'll see what happens. The official count from Judy Batista, apparently, about the pass interference replay rule, asked if, this is the competition committee, are you in favor of making this new rule permanent? 21 teams said no, 8 said yes. And I said, all right, well, how about we extend it for one more year? 17 said no, 5 said yes. I mean, that's just crazy to me. I also don't really understand how more people said yes to keeping it permanent but not extending it. Should we keep this forever? Absolutely we should. All right, if we don't keep it forever, should we extend it one more year? No. Never. Hate it. Get it out of here. Who are these three teams that don't have very good reading comprehension? I don't understand. I guess they're very all-or-nothing teams. I don't know. But anyways, it seems like that's going away, which I don't super care. I mean, obviously the rule is a point of frustration, and maybe they want it gone so they can find something better, but I would say keep it until you find something better. Don't just get rid of it because there's going to be horribly egregious calls that would be overturned with this that now can no longer be overturned. So, way to go. Continuing on with the news, and I didn't put this in my notes, but it sounds like, and we'll see how it goes. Let me put it this way. It's being reported that Tom Brady is very likely going somewhere else. Now, I am surprised by that. Part of the reason is because I've been trying to convince myself it's not going to happen so that I'm not let down, because I want him out of New England, because I want this empire to be done with. Although, you know, they're probably just going to get a new quarterback and it's going to be fine, whatever. But at least then we could say Tom Brady wasn't that great, which isn't fair. We probably shouldn't do that, but I'm just bitter, man. I'm to the point of being bitter, and I tend to think I'm not that kind of a person, right? I appreciate people's success, but it's just made something I love, football, kind of hard to watch at times. And so it's going to take some time to heal. I mean, people still hate the Cowboys for the 90s, and they won like 2 Super Bowls. I got over that a long time ago. Not a huge fan, but I don't despise them like a lot of people do. Anyways, the only reason I'm skeptical is certain bits of information get maybe said in a way that, you know, it's sort of like the telephone game. The other bit of information that has come out is that the Patriots are waiting for a little bit of clarity on the CBA thing before they approach Tom Brady with a contract. So the question, is it possible that the lack of interest from the Patriots to reach out to Tom and make a serious offer is being misinterpreted, not only by certain people, but also by Tom Brady, to mean that the best offer is going to come from other teams and I'm going to end up somewhere else, and this is kind of the talk that's been going on. You know, Tom's like, I don't know, they're not really talking to me. I'll probably end up somewhere else, and that just explodes into this thing. Tom Brady is planning to play elsewhere. And then then when we get a little more clarity on the CBA, the Patriots go to him. They're like, all right, so what have you been hearing? Here's what we'd like to do. We'd love to get you back. You know, we're going to get this thing rocking and rolling. You know that you're not going to succeed at this level anywhere else. You know, it's as much as it's maybe not entirely fair to call him a system quarterback, let's be completely honest about it. Tom Brady does a lot of things really well, but he does a lot of things not well at all. And depending on what offense he goes to and how competent of a team they are, it's never going to be anything like the Patriots, because we've never seen anything like the Patriots. Because the fact of the matter is, if I had to pick between Tom Brady or Bill Belichick in terms of what made the Patriots, Bill Belichick gets like 90% of the credit in my mind. His masterful ability to beat everybody in the chess game of football is what makes this the way that it is. Again, Tom Brady's a good football player. He's very smart. He's very accurate with the football. I mean, at times, he's got some pretty terrible throws. But a lot of this is timing and the fact that almost every single play is a guy coming across the middle wide open every single play, and he's able to dump it off to him, and then they run for 10 yards. That's not something any team but the Patriots can do. So when they go to him and they say, look, let's not play around. You know that this is where you're going to succeed. You might be able to make a little bit more money over there, but we're going to offer you a very generous contract to bring you back. Here's what it is. Is it possible my hopes get shattered and he still ends up back in New England despite the fact that there are reports that the expectation is he will go somewhere else? Yes, that's possible. However, still pretty excited that all the reports are saying he's going elsewhere. And so I'm going to let myself get a little bit excited, but still kind of understand that the situation is the Patriots have not even come to the table yet. And when they enter the conversation, and they will come into the conversation at some point, things can change pretty rapidly. We just have to see how that goes. Some talk about Derrick Henry. I don't think there's too many Packer fans that want him, but I have seen a little bit of that. I saw somebody even go so far as to say we should, I think, choose not to extend Kenny Clark and trade or not also sign Bulaga and then go out and get Derrick Henry, which I would very much disagree with. But, and again, this could just be lip service. We don't know until it's official, until the ink dries, but it sounds like the Titans, at least the Titans are saying they're trying to keep Derrick Henry. Now, that might have to do with some kind of concession. Like, look, you're not getting $17 million, so stop saying it. Ezekiel Elliott got a six-year, $9 million, or excuse me, that would be the worst. That would be hilarious. How about a six-year $9 million? What do you think, big guy? You want a cool $1 million in your pocket right now? Because I'll cut you a check. You think I'm lying? Six-year $90 million contract, which is $15 million on average. Derrick Henry says he wants that to be the floor. So, for example, maybe the Titans are trying to offer him basically the same contract, and Henry's like, nope, sorry, that's the floor. That doesn't mean I'm going to accept the floor, because I know I can get better than that. You got to do better than that. But either way, the question is, are the Titans officially 100% moving on? It doesn't sound like it, but, you know, again, who really knows? In addition, and this was in the Facebook group from, apparently it's via Tom Silverstein, there is mutual interest in extending Aaron Jones. Now, on one hand, this is kind of a duh kind of a thing, because of course the Packers want to keep him. The Packers always want to keep good players, always. But that's only part of the equation. And of course Aaron Jones wants to continue to play and get a contract extension. Every player wants to get a contract extension. So the fact that there's mutual interest is self-evident. The question is, how close to agreeing on an actual contract are they? And I would guess they probably haven't even really talked about it. However, Aaron Jones is one of those guys that could get an extension, which could actually help our salary cap and all this stuff, right? He's in the final year of his deal, and so, again, I went through a lot of these guys. You know, David Bakhtiari, I think, is a great candidate for an extension. It's going to free up a ton of money. Corey Linsley, as much as I said they could potentially move on from him at some point, he's a candidate for an extension. Lane Taylor could get an extension. Kenny Clark could get an extension. Kevin King, Aaron Jones. I don't know if Aaron Jones is going to save us a whole bunch of money because he's on his rookie deal, but I mean, he's in line. He's one of those guys who is a 2021 free agent that could be in line to get an extension right now. The question is, what's the number? So, you know, I had talked about possibly looking to replace Aaron Jones. The only reason I'm saying that is because he's been so good. He and his agent may be the kind of guys who look at it and say, look, if we put up another good year, we could be one of these $15 million running backs. Especially considering, you know, you look at Ezekiel Elliott getting a $15 million contract, what, last year? And we're talking about a 2021 free agency contract. $15 million is not even that much. You got Ezekiel Elliott contracts are going to be $16, $17 million in 2021. So, you know, even if we don't get top-tier money, $14, $15 million for sure. The question is, should the Packers extend him, should they pay him $14, $15 million? The answer is no. Now, we'll see if they actually end up doing it. I am 100% opposed to it. Now, what happens if you're talking about an extension and Aaron Jones seems receptive to an $8 million contract? Suddenly, we have mutual interest. I mean, I don't know exactly what my cutoff would be, but I feel like $8 million is, you know, especially if we're talking about let's do it over years. So it's not just we got to talk guarantees and we have to talk about longevity. Because let's face it, running backs don't last. And so if we start waving around 4 or 5 year contracts, which I don't know if that's smart to offer a 5 year contract to any running back, especially a guy that does have some injury issues already. But if he's willing to take a contract at $8 million, and let's say we load it up with guarantees and we give him some extra years to sweeten the deal so that we're not paying just a massive amount of money on a per-year basis, that's what makes the difference. And so I'd be excited. I want to retain Aaron Jones, and the Packers do as well, and every fan should. The question is, how much do you pay a guy? How much do you pay, regardless of how good they are? Because, again, you go back and look at the guys that got monster contracts. At the time, it seemed to make sense. But then the first year of their contract, you look at it and go, how dumb is that? He's not even that good. They almost never live up to their contract, especially since most of these contracts are backloaded. So in the first year, it's not as big of a cap hit, even though they're probably still not worth it. And then that cap hit just keeps going up and up and up, and they keep getting worse and worse and worse. It just never, almost never becomes a reasonable thing. So hopefully it's true. Hopefully there's an extension coming, and hopefully it's not for massive money. And if that happens, we got Aaron Jones locked up for a while. But even at that, I don't really want it to be a long-term thing unless it's one of those where it's heavily front-loaded in terms of guarantees being front-loaded, not necessarily contract. There's a lot of different moving pieces. But if it's a five-year contract but the guarantees basically dry up after year two, there's like a little bit left, maybe like $4 million in year three, and the total cap hit is like 11. So if he, you know, it's one of those things that in 3 years, would you be willing to pay 11 for Aaron Jones at his peak? Yes. If Aaron Jones has fallen off and he's continually injured, would you take a $4 million cap hit to free up the extra $7 million? Yes. So it just gives you that extra bit of leeway there. So we'll see. And again, that's something to keep an eye on. There's questions about what are we going to do as far as cap money. Extensions are something that's not very much talked about that definitely should be. David Bakhtiari is only 30, and he's still one of the best tackles in football. I have a feeling we could free up, you know, I don't know, $6 million, $7 million with a David Bakhtiari extension. I'm just making up numbers. I do have official numbers. I just don't feel like looking it up. But again, David Bakhtiari, Corey Linsley, Lane Taylor, Kenny Clark, Kevin King, and also Kevin King probably isn't going to save us much money either. That's probably going to go up. Kenny Clark would also probably maybe go up. In terms of actually, I'm saying those are the guys that could be extended. In terms of guys that could save us money, Corey Linsley and David Bakhtiari are the big ones. Probably Lane Taylor as well if we decide to extend him, although he's 32 years old, so I kind of doubt that's going to happen. I think we're just going to let him write out his contract, and that'll be the end of that. In terms of meetings, the Packers, I might have mentioned this already, they met with Kenneth Murray. Now, I saw on Twitter Bukowski had put out a massive list of linebackers, and he kind of did the whole, they met with a billion linebackers, and it's just crazy that, you know, and it's, I kind of did that with wide receivers too. The problem is almost all of these are unofficial. And so the unofficial meetings don't mean much of anything. Actually, it might've been, I think it was defensive linemen was what he had. He did linebacker as well, but there's a list of defensive linemen, and he says Packers doing their work on IDL in Indy. And it's basically a list of like all the guys that could be available at 30 on that list, or possibly even second round guy. And so the biggest issue I have with it is informal and formal are very, very different. I mean, informal is you just happen to kind of bump into them and talk to them for a little bit. And I think generally you just want to do that as much as possible. So to treat that as though, oh, wow, look at all these guys they met with. They must be really interested in it, which, of course, we know they want to get a defensive tackle. So we know they're interested. But the issue that I have is that it's not really like they're expending resources. Show me who they met with formally, because you have a limit of how many formal interviews you can have. There's no limit to how many guys you can bump into and shake hands with. At least I'm not aware of that. And if there is, there's going to be some serious scandals going on as far as they went over their limit. And so I want to try to get a more comprehensive list of who the actual formal interviews were with, because right now there's people pumping out these lists of just, here's 13 people the Packers met with. Like, yeah, but not really. Break that down into formal and informal, and I'll take a second look at it. Informal. Whatever. Get out of my face. The last little bit, and I got an early start today. It was a 50-minute podcast, and I got plenty of time. There was a big story out of the combine about Kenneth Murray helping a pedestrian with CPR. And as I said, Kenneth Murray, I believe, I think his first official was with the Packers, is what the story on that was. So essentially what the story is that there was, so he and his girlfriend are driving back from church. Some car like swerves near him and is like, what in the world is going on? They jump out of the car, they go running somewhere. He looks and there's a lady laying on the ground bleeding. She's completely unconscious. He's thinking this lady might be already gone. Starts CPR. Girlfriend calls the cops. He gets her back breathing again, gets her conscious, stays with her. The other people are staying with her. They wait for the paramedics to show up, make sure that she's okay. Murray then gets back in his car and drives off. That's the story. So apparently there was a bit of an uproar when Matt Schneidman talked about this, and people started making comments. Some people saying they didn't really believe it or whatever. He says the number of people doubting this story is wild. He didn't just save to impress people, blah, 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 right? He's real offended that people aren't impressed by this story. Here's the thing, though. I've got nothing against Matt Schneidman. I just subscribed to The Athletic. I think he does a fantastic job. Listen to the way he phrased this story. I'm sorry, Matt, but this is your fault, dude. What I told you is what happened. Here's how he phrases this story. Kenneth Murray just told a wild story about how he saved a woman's life last season by performing CPR on the side of the road while she bled from the head. After he revived her, he sprinted away from the scene because he didn't want anyone to recognize him, you know, to give him credit. What's that again? So if I'm a police officer and I come across a woman bleeding to death, and I find out that Kenneth Murray had something to do with it, and his story is, I don't know, I just happened to be walking down the road, and I saw her bleeding from the head, completely unconscious. I revived her, and then I sprinted from the scene. I'm sorry, but he's going in handcuffs that moment, because something is very wrong with this story. Completely left out of this is the fact that, first of all, he was driving down the road with somebody else. He not only performed CPR, but there were other people around. That was not mentioned. His girlfriend was there and did call 911. That wasn't mentioned. And he didn't sprint away from the scene after he performed CPR. He waited for paramedics. He made sure she was okay, and then he drove off because he didn't feel the need to sit around and you know, be some kind of a glory hound. But the idea that some random woman just happens to be bleeding, he revives her, and then sprints from the scene so that nobody knows he was there, you know, because, quote-unquote, he didn't want the credit. Please. That makes no sense. But it turns out that wasn't the story. That is the weirdest version of what happened that you could possibly tell. Sounds like Matt Schneidman is trying to frame him for attempted murder, and then is like, come on, guys, why are you saying negative things? This is a great story. Dude, I've seen TV shows, man. I've watched these documentary shows where crazy stuff happened and they're like, the detectives are trying to figure out what happened. They tell a story like this and I just instantly in my chair go, lock him up. I know he did it. Everybody knows he did it. He probably hit her with a brick and ran because that's how you laid out the story. Why did you say it that way? Is that how you were told the story? I don't get it. So yeah, the comment, just listen to the WTF, odd story, seems fishy. And then he gets all up in arms. How dare you say something negative about him? Like, dude, you're a great writer, but somehow you're a great writer and a horrible storyteller. I don't know how that works. But oh my goodness, that is the worst version of that story you could ever tell. I'm just picturing like being his lawyer as he's explaining the story to a judge, and I'm like, no, what are you doing? Stop saying the words that you're saying. Objection. My client is an idiot. I would like him to step down now. Anyway, I thought that was hilarious. Performed CPR on a woman while she bled from the head, revived her, and then sprinted from the scene. Oh. Whew. Sorry, that was funny. But, hey, props to Kenneth Murray, man. That is actually a very good story. The real one, great story. The other one is a great story for a television show. But the real story is just a really good story about a good dude, saved a woman's life. And, at the end of the day, humble. Because that was the other complaint, was you're saying he doesn't want credit, but he brought it up. But again, you can't be mad at people because you're not telling the full story. You're saying, your tweet says he told a wild story. Literally, your words, Kenneth Murray just told a wild story. So when people hear that, and they say, wait a minute, first of all, this whole thing is fishy. And then you're telling me that he told you a story about how he didn't want credit for saving someone's life, but he just told you that story. And then you get upset, like, oh, he was asked, you bunch of morons. No, excuse me, we're not morons. You're there. We don't know that that's what happened because you didn't tell us what happened. Because you gave this wild story. Again, you got to paint a picture, man. We're not there. We don't know the story. We're not at the press conference. We're picturing Kenneth Murray being a really weird dude with disheveled hair and kind of crazy, walking up to the podium like, I have something to tell you. Like, okay. Last week, a woman was bleeding. Side of the road. Thought she was dead. Brought her to life. Sprinted away. Because I'm humble. Because that's the story you told us. So yeah, we're going to say that's a fishy story, dude. Tell better stories and we won't, you know, make comments like that. Anyways, it's funny. But I also get annoyed by the haughty how dare yous. No, give me a break. People are right to think that this whole thing doesn't make sense because it doesn't the way that you said it. Anyways, I'm going to get out of here. You folks have yourselves a fantastical day. We got more goodness coming tomorrow. As far as the combine, I'll be honest, I don't like that this got pushed back later. You know, prime time, nothing. Prime time is my bedtime, so not a fan. But I'll stay up as late as I can, check out as much as I can, hopefully get some more cool information. And again, I'll try to dig a little bit deeper into the wide receiver, quarterback, tight end class to see if there's any interesting nuggets about these players. And I'm sure there's going to be some massive movement on media big boards. But again, I don't know that that's necessarily a reflection of what GMs are thinking. But once this is done and people do start putting out big boards, I will adjust mine. And that's usually when you get sort of the biggest movement on big boards is after the combine. Plus, I mean, it's not just the combine numbers, but it's also rumors. You know, you're listening to what scouts and things are saying. And then media people, you know, as much as they want to talk about grinding the tape, if they hear teams saying this guy's really good, they're going to bump him up because they want to be correct more than they want to be purists, which is admirable. I'm kind of similar in that way. The only reason I'm doing mine my way is because I don't know, and if I'm wrong, I want to be wrong so I can go back and figure it out. But, you know, again, the CeeDee Lamb thing, he is where he is because I don't see it. If I was in the media and my career depended on this, I would just put him as my number two wide receiver and just be like, no, he's great. He's fantastic. Because I do think he's going to have a good career. I just, you know, whatever. Anyways, talking to myself now, so you probably don't need to be here for this part. I'll continue this conversation when you're not around. Hope you folks have a fantastic Friday. It is the, you know, if you're in Wisconsin with me, apparently it's the last cold day until we get this warm blast. Hopefully we won't get too many more cold days. Enjoy it. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.